The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush. In order to stay ahead in business, you need to be on the pulse of the business world, current news, and politics. We'll provide the thought-provoking topics and show you where we have been, what's next, and what it means for you at home. Life's complicated. Let Andy help you figure it out. Now, here is your host, Andy Bush.
Welcome to Engage. I'm your host, Andy Bush. Remember, you can get the show's podcast not only on Voice America, but also on iTunes. Just type in Engage with Andy Bush to find it. You can also get my research on andrewbush.com. Now, today we are so fortunate to have on one of the biggest hitters in global investments, Stephen Friedman from UBS. Stephen is the America's Team Global Investment Strategist for UBS and also spearheads the allocation process for wealth management research. Stephen, thanks for coming on Engage.
It's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
Thanks. All right. Well, this has got to be one of the most difficult, crazy times to be investing clients' hard-earned money. Help our audience understand what you guys call the spinning Rubik's Cube of the markets right now.
Well, you know, it's been a pretty interesting year so far, to the extent that if you just look at equity markets, you know, the S&P 500 is up about 3%, so it just looks like a relatively easy sailing. But in fact, there have been some very interesting developments in this period. We've had concerns about the growth trajectory in the first quarter due to weather related events.
Right.
We had some very significant geopolitical events also affecting market perception, most notably in the Ukraine with the crisis there between Russia and the West. Within the markets, we've had basically in this relatively overall smooth market, we had some very impressive rotations between parts of the market, with essentially a lot of the stocks that had been doing well in 2013 and at the beginning of this year starting to underperform, and some of the losers outperforming quite significantly. And then you've had some trends that have really gone against what a lot of people were expecting. For instance, in the bond markets, where the expectation was for yields to rise, certainly that's what we were expecting and what a lot of other commentators were expecting to see, and instead we've seen yields come down. So I think there are quite a few things to talk about, and I would say, generally speaking, our view has to always be based on a macroeconomic scenario. And here we are pretty confident that the weakness we saw with, for instance, the first quarter GDP numbers in the U.S. being nearly flat, we think that this weakness is temporary, and that we're starting to see indicators showing that we will be growing faster for the balance of the year. I think overall what's important to keep in mind, and one of the reasons why we think growth is going to be more sustained, is that this is the first year really since the end of the recession that we no longer have an important part of the economy, an important sector in the economy, deleveraging significantly. We first had the consumer deleveraging, we had the financial sector deleveraging, and in recent years it's been the government. This year, unlike last year when the sequester spending cuts and the tax hikes were essentially creating a drag on the economy, this year we don't expect to see a fiscal drag anymore. And that means the private sector, which is able to grow at a relatively healthy clip of about 3%, ultimately can determine the pace of growth. So, you know, but when you put all that together, you know, that this ultimately means there's still some pretty supportive forces for corporate earnings. We think that for the S&P 500, you'll see earnings grow at about 8% this year. And valuations at this point are about in line with long-term averages. So stocks are no longer they're no longer cheap like they were in prior years, but they haven't become expensive either. So we think ultimately the earnings growth, it can be the main driver of the market. It means that we can expect to see positive returns going forward, taking a 6 to 12 month view, but not the double digit type of returns that we had last year. We think that that's something which is unlikely to be reproduced this year.
Well, let's, you know, UBS has a preference for equities credit in the U.S. dollar. Let's walk us through the equities calls. The S&P's, you know, putting in new all-time highs, and you still like stocks overall. And I guess that's being driven by your earnings expectation. But certainly, I'm sure with many of your clients, there's a lot of hand-holding that has to go on at this time because of the spectacular returns last year. And as you mentioned, the somewhat gut-wrenching rotation that's been occurring in the markets this year.
Right. So, you know, the question you ask about the meaning of having stock indices at all-time highs, that's a question we get a lot from our clients. It's a pretty natural thing because whenever that happens, this gets highlighted in the media. And the way we always answer this is the number, the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones, is just a number which doesn't have any meaning unless you put it in relation with something that's happening in the economy. So the best or the most typical way to try to normalize this number is to put it in relation to corporate earnings. And if you do that, you basically get evaluation measure called the price earnings ratio, and that's really the thing you have to be looking at, but not the actual level of the S&P 500. So when we look at the price earnings ratio of the S&P 500, right now we are a bit north of 15 times the expected earnings for next year, and that is smack in line with the average we've had since 1960. So that this is the reason why I said before that we think that valuations are fair. We're no longer around 10 times forward earnings as we had at the bottom of the cycle during the Great Recession, and we're not in the mid-20s as we had during the tech bubble. So we're sort of in an intermediate range, which basically can, you know, it can mean two things. Either we just kind of stay at fair valuations, and in which case the earnings growth is going to be the main driver, and that's our general, generally our base case. But you could even see on the more positive side, and this happens often, you could see that the valuations of the market overshoot. You could see that valuations get a little bit into expensive territory for a while before something else happens. So taking a one-year horizon, we do think that this overall acceleration in the economic picture and the fact that the Fed is normalizing its policy, but very at a pretty moderate pace, we think overall it creates a relatively positive environment for the market to continue growing, but again at somewhat more moderate pace than we had in 2013.
Well, two areas that you have overweights in for equities are the United States and Europe. The central bank clearly is a key variable. I mean, normally when a central bank begins to ease is when you want to buy stocks. Clearly, there's somewhat of a divergence here between the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank as the Federal Reserve is tapering and reducing down some of the massive monetary stimulus that they've put into the system. But the ECB is a different animal. Maybe you could walk me through a little bit about what you guys expect from the ECB at this key June 5th meeting that's coming up and how that plays into your call for equities.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, the thesis on the U.S. and on European equities, and here I mean more specifically the Eurozone equities,
is actually
pretty similar. It really is about earnings growth. And I would say in the case of the Eurozone, there's a stronger case that can be made for earnings to recover because unlike the U.S. where earnings are significantly above levels we saw in 2007, in the Eurozone, you actually have very depressed earnings, which are significantly below the levels of 2008, but also even below levels that you saw in 2011, which was a more recent peak. So there's a pretty important potential for earnings to normalize, to catch up with all the lost ground. And this is probably going to be the main driver for Eurozone earnings going forward. So this is the reason why ultimately we think both the U.S. and the Eurozone are attractive places to invest. Now, to your point about the central bank, where this plays a role in our view is in terms of the expected currency move. And here, as you mentioned, we have the U.S., which is really ahead of a lot of the other major central banks in terms of beginning the exit process from a very loose monetary policy. So you know, here the expectation is that the tapering will go on until the fourth quarter of this year, and that then that basically sets the stage for the first rate hike, which we're expecting to see towards the middle of next year. In the Eurozone, the ECB is really in a different situation. They're, of course, at a much earlier stage of recovery. They were still in recession during parts of last year, and they've started to reemerge from that. And at the same time, the thing that is worrisome from the perspective of the European Central Bank is that you're seeing inflation at very, very low levels, which is a matter of concern, because you can start thinking about the Japan situation 20 years ago, where expectations about inflation start becoming so low that they become entrenched. And the European Central Bank basically wants to try to prevent these expectations from becoming entrenched, which is basically...
I was going to say, what do you think they're going to do? Yeah, I totally understand the inflation aspect. It's clearly running at 0.7% on their CPI is 1.3% below where their target level is at 2%. And it's been that way. And I know that Draghi has been saying they've been waiting for updated forecasts for not only an inflation but the economy to move forward. But the market is certainly starting to anticipate the ECB acting. I guess it's a question of, do you think they'll go to negative interest rates? Do you think they'll engage in quantitative easing? I know from an equity standpoint, the best thing would be if they engaged in some kind of quantitative easing. What's your view?
We think at this meeting, they're very likely to go for negative interest rates.
Okay.
That's probably something which is more palatable to the more hawkish parts of their constituents, in particular to Germany. So you know, it's an important symbolic element here. I think ultimately the market reaction, especially on the currency side, is going to depend on not just the step itself, but also the language around the step, and if they're signaling that possibly there's more to come. You know, once they breach
right.
this taboo of negative interest rates.
Oh, great point. Yeah.
So that's probably what they're going to do. I think there are other measures that they can use. You know, that they've been talking about the possibility of possibly purchasing asset-backed securities, which would be basically a way similar to what the Bank of England did a few years ago to try to channel credit to particular parts of the economy, especially if the asset-backed securities were linked to small businesses, for instance. So there are a number of things that they're going to be doing. I think as far as QE is concerned, it probably will take somewhat longer for them to really go in that direction, just because that's really seen as the biggest taboo.
Right. Well, they have an issue of as far as what they would buy. I mean, you know, they can't necessarily buy government securities because that would create an issue for of what they're allowed to do through the Constitution. But clearly, there's been some discussion about bank loans of a deeper market that they could get involved with as far as the quantitative easing. And I granted, Stephen, I totally know this is difficult to figure out because no one really knows, probably even the ECB at this point. But if you were to take a guess of what they could go and take a look at as far as what they could do from a quantitative easing standpoint, what do you think is the most likely scenario?
I think probably they would want to try to use some instrument that would ultimately create or stimulate the flow of credit to the economy. So essentially going for loans packaged in the form of asset-backed securities. I think that's probably what they might do. The issue of buying government paper, I mean, that's not taboo if they're buying paper in a way that is sort of on a market cap basis, right? The problem is more in some of the prior programs the European Central Bank was involved with, when it was really about purchasing the paper of the periphery, which was basically seen as basically creating an unlevel playing field and subsidizing particular countries. That's really where you start getting in trouble with constitutional aspects. But
I see.
Again, I think we're not quite there yet in terms of QE. I think you'll have to see some further months of an inability to change the inflation number here. And this is where the currency ultimately matters again, because one of the reasons we are seeing this strong euro, I'm sorry, one of the reasons why we're seeing these low inflation numbers is the strong euro, which is a matter of concern, and which is one of the reasons why ultimately, we think you will see this rate cut in an attempt to try to weaken the currency, which if it's an effect that is maintained for some time, should start feeding into a little bit higher inflation going forward. So, you know, there's some circularity here, but essentially the European Central Bank is trying to move away from low inflation by using monetary policy and its impact through currency markets.
All right. Cool. Well, let's take a break here. When we get back, we'll talk about Stephen's outlook for U.S. equities, and we'll get to a little bit of fixed income and currencies. You're listening to Engage.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you an entrepreneur that wants to achieve more? Not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful that adds more value to more people in more ways? Listen for Be More, Achieve More, Inspiration for the Entrepreneurial Mind with host Chris Cooper. You'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with the passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. These people are making a difference and will help give you the motivation and insight to achieve more. Be More, Achieve More can be heard live Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.